Okie dokie.
And we're back.
I hate when it does that. It's not a problem, but when I start recording sometimes, it has like super zoomed in. And I don't know. I've never been able to figure out why. Just every once in a while, it starts with super zoomed in.
So I lost my topics page. Sorry.
Topics.
Yeah.
What's next?
So, first of all, we have to remember Dord. We have to start using it whenever we encounter that. So,
okay,
it's going to be our new thing. You know, Mad Candy threw a fellow away, so...
Dord.
Yeah, you go through various various gimmicks.
We're going to have to explain Dord every time he uses it.
Like, they stop, you know, on Kami Bang Man, they stop going, "My wife," all the time. In fact, Scott Harkman now, when he talks about his wife, he says, "My girlfriend, who I later married." Just so he doesn't have to go doing my wife thing. They still do "it's been" sometimes, but not as much. Technicality, no down, boo over.
Technicality, no down, boo over. Okay, so Rush Limbaugh. Putting foot in mouth. Well, he does that daily, but... Okay, demonstrating the thing he's talking...
Yeah, like...
Demonstrating the...
His complete lack of self-awareness.
Well, but demonstrating the concept that he is saying he is immune to, right?
Okay, so he's talking about the Dunning-Kruger effect. This is it's a transcript that's available, I think it was August 12th, if you look through, if you go to his site. I mean, he put up the transcript, and you can listen to it, of this conversation that he had, that is just, it's absurd.
So
you read it and
you're
laughing.
Let's talk about the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? Because it's pretty interesting, right? And basically, maybe you should have made it instead of me.
Okay, the Dunning-Kruger effect is the concept that some people who feel most certain about things generally are the least educated about them, whereas people who feel less certain about things generally have more information. So it's sort of the idea that when you become a master at it, you start thinking you're not really that great. And when you start something, you think you're the best ever.
Right. So you can equate this immediately to a lot of things in politics and in popular media right now, right? People that... I don't want to turn this into bashing religion as well, but...
Well, I mean we can relate it to us with the show. Yeah. When we started, I mean, we obviously didn't know much. But then, you know, I think we felt that we were pretty much nailing it about 2 or 3 years in. And now we kind of know how much variety there is and how much we didn't know. And so we almost feel like it's hard for us. We don't think beers are wow beers anymore. We don't have these things. It's just, we feel like there's so much out there that we don't know that it's hard to... It's hard to say whether we have a full grasp of everything that's happened.
So what Rush Limbaugh said was, you know, he explained the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? He said that, you know, people who have complete certainty over something are less intelligent or something like that is the way.
It was a Bertrand Russell quote that he quoted, which is that Bertrand Russell said something along the lines of, the problem with the world is that the people who are most certain are the dumb ones, and the people who are the smart ones are the least certain.
Right. And Rush went on to say, "I'm completely certain of everything."
Yeah. So he said,
"And I'm not."
He said, "This doesn't apply to everyone because I'm certain and I'm right."
And I'm smart.
And I'm smart. And then he said, like, his buddy on the, his buddy, who call screens or whatever, he's also certain and he's smart. But this definitely applies to Obama out of, like, nowhere. We're just seeing at one point he says, like, does this remind you of anybody? I mean, he's basically talking about himself. He's talking about himself for 5 or 6 paragraphs. It's just, you are describing Rush Limbaugh. And then he just says, does this remind you of anybody? Does this, somebody who is always wrong, completely wrong and will never ever see that he's not wrong, is just so completely obsessed with his with himself that he'll never see he's not wrong. Yeah, Obama. What? What? Yeah. Like I said, it's like looking in the mirror and somebody then telling you how a mirror works. Like, that's light that's being reflected back at you, so you're seeing an image of yourself, and then him saying, oh, yeah, that's Obama.
Man,
he must be on some crazy pills.
The thing about Dunning-Kruger, which I find, I mean, I see it around, right? There's lots of people that are very certain.
Like,
I don't have a great example I can't think of, but you know what I can't apply. What I can't apply personally is, you know, when Greg and I try to do an argument, right? Oftentimes I won't argue him because I don't have all the data I need. Right? I will only argue Greg when I'm certain, but there's very few things that I feel certain about.
Right.
Right. So maybe it means I am not dumb, that I'm one of the smart ones, because I know that I cannot carry a full fact-based argument on very many things for very long. So, but when I can, it's a lot of fun to argue with Greg.
So the implications of what Jeff said are that therefore I'm the dumb one. And look, look, there are times when I'm the dumb one. Absolutely.
And I think it's personality. I mean, I'm not equating the smart and dumb. It's a personality thing.
Right. But,
and Dunning-Kruger, what I read about Dunning-Kruger affects, you know, I can only relate to myself is, and I don't want this to sound like I'm patting myself on the back, but there's oftentimes I'm not comfortable arguing for something I don't have right. all the facts about.
The difference between you and me is not, I don't think it's a Dunning-Kruger thing, because what it is that you're not willing to argue without a certain modicum of certainty. I am willing to argue without a certain modicum of certainty. So I feel like that argument is often the best way to get at something, even if you don't know all the facts. So, but I believe, I try to, and I think I've demonstrated this before. I believe I have. I don't know, you know, whether everybody agrees with me, mm-hmm. that I can come around. You know, if you present me with the evidence, and you know, I don't have that certainty necessarily about things that I argue about. And if you present me with enough evidence or a good enough argument, I will change and I will mm-hmm. say, okay, you're right. So that's it's a difference in argumentation style, right. But I don't think it really applies in this way, because it's just that I'm willing to argue with less certainty than you are.
Right.
I don't feel certainty. I guarantee you that. About almost anything I talk about, I don't feel certainty.
Okay.
I don't feel certainty about things like what I had for lunch. So how can I feel certainty about anything else? But certainty is a weird concept anyway.
Well, I mean, you could also talk about subject matter expert, right?
Yeah.
And maybe that's better than certainty, right?
Right.
For argument's sake, but don't. If I'm not an expert on something, if I don't have the facts, Greg will know that. Greg should know that I will never make up a fact that I'm not sure about when I'm trying to argue something. I mean, I just don't do it.
I don't make up facts either.
Well, I know, but...
Or at least I don't do it, like, intentionally.
I hope you're not you're not hearing me backhandedly insult you.
I'm just clarifying, and that's all.
Because I have no intention of... meaning anything I just said, I have no intention of meaning that the opposite is true on that side of the table. I'm just speaking for myself. And, you know, that's why I don't argue Greg. I'm making no statements on why Greg argues, right? And he'll try to start an argument with me, and it often fizzles because I just have to stop because I don't know the next step, you know, so...
What if I tried to start an argument?
There's been times. Okay. Not recently, but we don't have great arguments very often, but when we do, they're sure fun.
Yeah, they are fun. I mean, a good argument is always good to have. It's always a lot of fun. That's sort
no,
of
it
why...
isn't.
Oh, I like it. this reminded me of you know, there's a school of improv, the Yes And, and there's another school of quasi improv called No But, where you disagree with everybody, but then you offer your own.
Well, there's the Monty Python skit about the argument clinic or whatnot, right? You hear that one?
No, I don't think so. No.
Oh. It's a phone line you call. So you call the line if you want to have an argument, right? But the guy that the guy talks to is just contradicting him at every turn, right?
Oh.
It's like, this isn't an argument. This is simple contradiction, you know. And so that's what I was commenting on, was the Monty Python skit.
So kind of like libertarians. Boom!
Unlock this for me.
I just slammed Greg, if he's listening. He said he wanted to talk with me about libertarians at some point. The thing that he needs to know is that we're infected in America by a strange brand of libertarianism that is very much towards the anarcho-capitalism type of libertarian, which is not what I think Greg is really about. But those people who are anarcho-capitalists are just ridiculous and essentially contrarians. They will say things like, well, the state is completely, you know, the state is what messes everybody up. And they will say things like, when you mention that it's corporations, or you say, you know, corporations are doing all these things, they, well, the state charters corporations, so it really is the state's fault. So they're just being contradictory.
Right.
And then they don't really have any real point. Mm-hmm. They also don't have a solution. They just say, oh, well, if the state were gone, everything would be better, because then we would hire companies to resolve our disputes, and everyone would know to not use a company that doesn't do good. It's like totally like not seeing the world around them, and the idea that people are going to take advantage of them in this system.
Right. Here, let me play you a little bit of the argument clinic.
All right.
Hi. Is this the right one for an argument? I've told you once. No, you haven't.
Yes, I have.
When? Just now.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
I'm telling you, I did.
You did not.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this a 5-minute argument or the full half hour?
Oh, just the 5-minute one.
Fine. Thank you. Anyway, I did.
You most certainly did not.
Now, let's get one thing quite clear. I most definitely told you.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, this is an argument.
I get it.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. It's just contradiction.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
It is not.
It is.
I get it. Okay, so that's just, you know, they established the game pretty quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, I mean, they flesh it out a little bit more, right? Defining an argument and stuff like that. You know, there's some good stuff in there, but yeah, I mean, I'm not going to play. This was the shorter version. This is only 2 minutes, but yeah, 2 minutes is probably still too long.
Mm-hmm.
No, it isn't.
Not playing your game, man.
Is there anything else about libertarians? I'm sorry. I think that was the end, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much the end. Had a argument on a message board about the word literally. This is something that has come up before.
Literally.
Because Webster's dictionary now has two definitions for literally, and one of them is used as emphasis, not necessarily the original definition of literally, which is not a metaphor. And my point was, I got into the argument because somebody on the message board said this is a de-evolution of language that we should fight against, blah, blah, blah. And so I just said, well, okay, if de-evolution doesn't actually exist, so, you know, it's just evolution, just represents change over time. De-evolution is not a technical term. It is just...
Yeah, evolution doesn't infer improvement.
Right. It is just a metaphor. So if you're using de-evolution simply as a non-technical argument, then you making an argument for a technical case for only using literally doesn't really make much sense. Or just, it works against your point.
Right.
So... Nice. So that was my only comment, and you know,
literally,
yeah, and that. But then I got more involved, and that, and then it turned into something where I just bowed out eventually, because all I was saying along the whole time was that, yeah, this happens, deal with it. Essentially, this is the way things happen. There are lots of words that mean different things now than they used to. I mean, there was a whole list of them that I had up at one point. But there were, but people started to argue about how it shows stupidity and horribleness in society that this is happening. And I was just like, I don't know where you're getting that from, because this is just something that's always happened. And the fact that dictionaries are covering it just means the dictionary is doing their job, which is to cover, basically to post how people are using the language. I mean, the thing is that words don't have meanings, right? Words, words have usages. Words don't have intrinsic meanings. There's not some platonic, you know, somewhere out there where bottle means bottle at all times. It's just a usage. It's a usage for this particular types of sounds.
Sorry about that.
So they will change over time. I mean, what nice meant has changed over time. What gay meant, obviously, has changed over time. Lots of these things just happen, and they're just cultural things.
Yeah, the problem with literally is it now means the opposite.
That has happened before. Yeah. I'll bring up the list of words, so we'll go over them, some of these, because it's kind of interesting. I just need to... That would be a lot easier if I... Okay. All right, here we go. So, abandon. We use the word to mean give up completely, but it used to mean to subjugate or subdue. Coming from the French phrase, mettre abandon, to give a public ban. So, okay. Addict used to meant people who were broke and given as slaves to people they owed money to. That was an addict. An assassin was the Arabic word for hashish eater, because warriors used to get doped up. Awful. In the 1300s, originally meant inspiring wonder.
Right.
Full of awe.
Right.
Now it means the opposite. I mean, yeah. I guess something could be inspire wonder and how awful it is, but...
that's why they invented awesome, I guess,
yeah.
Huh?
Awesome. Bimbo once meant a fellow, a chap, or one of the boys.
We need to take that one back.
Broadcast used to mean sowing seeds with a sweeping movement of the hand. Yeah, I guess that's sort of,
still does.
Still does in a certain sense.
No, I mean, there's... Like, if you know, you don't do yard work, but, you know, there's a seeder. It's called a broadcast seeder, right? And
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely see how it's still the same thing.
The analogy goes through, right?
Okay. And you can kind of see, you know, the origins of a new technology needed a way to describe what it was doing, what radio was doing. So they took from farm.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that one's cool.
Cute was a word for keenly perceptive and shrewd, but now it means pretty, charming, dainty. Mm-hmm. The original sense of dainty was worthy and substantial. Yeah, okay. That's way different.
Yeah.
This one I've always loved, decimate.
I know about decimate.
I think it's a cool word in its original usage, but look, so what? I mean, I think literally it's a cool word in its original usage.
Well, the problem
things change.
The problem with decimate is the colloquial meaning of decimate is worse than the technical meaning of decimate.
Right.
You know, if you decimate...
Decimate means remove one-tenth of something.
Right. Where when you hear something was decimated, you think it was 90%. You know, it almost seems... To me, it sounds like 90%, you know, was removed 10% remains. You know, that's kind of like when you hear, like, you know, the army was decimated.
Yeah.
You know, and actually it came from army, right? The Romans.
The Romans used to draw lots, and one out of every 10 soldiers would be killed by their own comrade.
Yeah, we're decimated.
Discipline, yeah.
I think a more common meaning is, like, you lost a battle and lost well over 50%,
right,
you know?
So, fantastic used to mean only existing in the imagination. And it's still, there's still that element. It's a, you know, a fantastic story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But now it's morphed into something way different. Something could not exist in the imagination and still be fantastic.
Right.
So that's a lot like what's happening literally. Let's see.
But see, you could have said before now, it was literally fantastic. Now you can't say that anymore. Because now they won't know what you mean.
Garble originally meant to sort something out, not to mess it up.
Huh.
Husband used to mean house owner. Nervous used to mean sinewy and vigorous. And nice at once meant ignorant.
He's nice.
Words change.
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
Well, now we need a new word for literally.
Well, no, I mean, we don't need a word for everything. You can describe literally with a short turn of phrase, right? You can describe this actually happened, right? That's literally, it's just not one word.
So instead of literally, I'll just say, I'm not shitting you.
Right. I mean, so you can.
I'm not shitting you. That's my new, you guys ruin literally. I'm going to say shit.
So it's not like the concept is lost to us. It's just a word that has become, that is starting to be used as something else. But the concept can still be
exist. Yeah, the concept exists. It's just now when you hear someone say literally,
you can't you can't be sure whether they mean it or not.
Right. Most often not.
Nowadays, most often not. Does it get on people's nerves? Absolutely. It gets on my nerves too, because you're used to something and then it changes. But you become that old man sitting on his porch, waving his cane.
I want
at the
my
kids.
Literally back, you
yeah.
motherfucker.
And you know, the person who listens to music and says, "Oh, this is all shit. You know, it was great in my day."
Well, it is all shit.
No, there's great music being made. It's just the stuff that plays on the radio is shit, but that's because of what happened. That has to do more with the business side of music than music itself.
Right.
Good music,
like,
is,
you know, we go
made.
Through those, you know, number one hits, like, you know, and it's not even worth looking at 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The 1994 charts.
Yeah. But there are kids who are growing up now who that this is the music that will define them as people. So they're going to look back at it with a sense of nostalgia that we don't have.
Right.
You know, I'm. You know, my parents did not think that any of the stuff that I liked was very good, even though I think of it as defining.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's that Dunning-Kruger effect.
Yeah,
I'd say,
it's that. So
I'm confident that 1994 music was shit. At least the stuff that made the top of the charts. Well, that's it. I don't think
the
all.
Thing is that,
like,
you know,
I don't think all new music is shit. It's just the stuff that gets.
The
top
thing
of
is,
the
if
charts.
You look back at the charts, there's a lot of, because we do that before the show. We're trying to find stuff. There's a lot of shit.
There was shit in 1979, yeah.
There's, you remember the good stuff, and you ignore the shit.
Yeah.
That's...
there's no good stuff in 1994. Like, let me pull up 1994 and let's talk about
it. All right, let's talk about 1994. Good year for movies. Great year for movies. Lots of really good stuff going on in the cinema. Pulp Fiction was 94.
All right. Number one singles... 1994, because we like doing nice round. Or, I guess 2004 was 10 years ago, but 1994 kind of falls into that too. All right, so
I don't think 94 does as much as 2004.
A Hero from Mariah Carey.
Okay.
All for Love, Bryan Adams, Rod Stewart, and Sting.
Oof.
The Power of Love, Celine Dion.
That's not the Huey Lewis song.
No.
It's got the power of love.
The Sign, Ace of Base. That's probably the best song of the year.
Oh, that's a great song.
Bumping.
I mean, a terrible song, but a great song, you know.
Yeah. Bump and Grind from R. Kelly.
Uh-huh.
Ace of Base came back for 2 more weeks after that. I Swear, All for One.
Oh, I swear by the moon.
Stay. Okay, so...
Oh, that was a defining song.
I Missed
song.
You. Lisa Loeb and yeah. Dinosaurs. How's that one go?
You said you only hear what you want to.
I'll have to look it up. I'm not sure it rings the bell. Boys to Men with...
Boys to Men.
I'll Make Love to You and On Bended Knee.
I remember that one. I don't know. I didn't like it, but I remember it. That was a defining song for a lot of people, though. I'll make love to you like you want me to, and I'll hold you tight.
I don't even know what this
baby,
one is here. Here Comes the Hot Stepper from...
Here Comes the Hot Stepper. Oh, the murderer. Here's a lyric of a monster. Murderer. The news. Excuse me. He's like that. And na 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 na.
Is that song?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
It's not the song that had it originally.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
See, in 94, I was listening to Green Day, right? So
right.
Green Day didn't make this chart. yeah. Hmm. That was a bunch of shit right there, except for...
No, there were... I mean... there are no classics in there. There are no songs that...
The most classic is The Sign.
I mean, the most classic is probably Stay, actually. I think that's the one that almost defined a type of music in a sense, a sort of a mixture of folk and rock type thing. I mean, other people were doing it, but its popularity helped bring on some other things. Remember, Ethan Hawke directed the video, and remember she was in those glasses the whole time. That became a big thing.
Mm-hmm. She still wears the glasses, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So. Yeah,
it started the whole... I don't know if it started the whole, but it definitely added to the whole sexy librarian concept.
And 2004 was all hip-hop or all R&B. 2004, we had... I won't even read the song names. I'll just do the artist. Outkast. And then Outkast featuring Sleepy Brown.
Uh-huh.
And then Twista featuring Kanye West.
No, I
want to
hear
Fox.
The songs now.
Hey Ya...
Sure, okay.
And then The Way You Move, which was Outkast and Sleepy Brown. Then you get Slow Jams with a Z.
Uh-huh.
Twista featuring Kanye West and Jamie Foxx. Then you get Yeah from Usher featuring Lil Jon and Ludacris.
Yeah.
Then you get Usher again, Burn. Then you get Fantasia. Yeah, Fantasia, I Believe. Usher again with More Burn and Confessions Part 2. Juvenile featuring Suya Sim, which is Slow Motion.
Now, there's a very interesting trend happening here. And it's socioeconomic. Because what happened in 2004 were... Napster was way earlier. But that was sort of when iTunes came out. People started to buy a lot singles. More stuff, singles. Billboard wasn't tracking those.
Mm.
So what you got was...
People who still bought CDs.
People who still bought CDs were buying the stuff, and they tended to be in the urban population... Mm-hmm. Because they didn't have access to the technology yet, because it was more expensive. And that was a socioeconomic thing that caused those things to rise to the top because they weren't being tracked. I think it's a really interesting kind of convergence there.
Yeah, I mean, it continues, right? You got, it's Terror Squad. Lean Back from Terror Squad.
Lean Back. Yep, I remember that one.
Okay. Goodies from Clara featuring... Petey Pablo, My Boo from Usher and Alicia Keys, and Drop It Like It's Hot, Snoop Dogg and Pharrell.
Drop It Like It's Hot. Yeah, okay.
So that was 2004.
Right.
Yeah, like no rock made it on the list.
Right. You know? And that's, like I said, that's a, that's about time. It's about the conditions in which Billboard was tracking things. And now they track things in a different way. So if you looked at, so now you get like Miley Cyrus and, or not even Miley, who's a new one? Carly Rae Jepsen? I don't know. It's hard to keep track of all the new ones. But, okay, so, I mean, what songs are you considering classics?
I don't know. I mean, I don't understand the irony or the hypocrisy of, you know, just because it's, you know, because I'm old, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I understand that. But it's just like, there was good music in 94, 2004, right? I mean, there was
good popular music. And today it's harder to find, or at least the methods by which we find them are radically different.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're not going to turn on a radio and find a song that you and I are going to like, probably. But that's sort of more in the direction of how radio is doing things, and less about the music that's necessarily being made and what music is being promoted, which is again a sociology issue as much as it is anything else.
You know, I'm trying to think of like the last time I turned on the radio.
I mean, I hear the gym all the time. That's the only time.
So I mean, when I turn on the radio, I mean, for the last forever, I listen to public radio and the public radio music station that we have, right? WYEP, and they play all kinds of eclectic shit, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's you know, far between, you know, good stuff often, but, you know, usually because I have a media player in my pocket, you know, I'm not turning on traditional radio. I just wonder how much terrestrial radio and even satellite radio suffering. Or is there so many people that just don't want to always have their iPod that they still use the stuff? Or is it really taking a hit? And I'm just curious.
I'm betting it's really taking a hit. I mean, the availability of when cell phones turned into all-in-one devices, that just destroyed, I think,
you'd have to look at radio advertising rates to really judge how much of a hit it took, right?
Right.
And then take out inflation. The dude left Meet the Press, right? David, whatever his name is, was fired from Meet the Press.
David Gregory?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And in one of the stories talking about that, you know, talking about just like how much media there is out there now, you know, political blogs, you know, SCOTUS blog 538, they do podcasts, you know, and yeah, there's just so much stuff to listen to. There's like almost no time to turn on your classic.
It's almost funny how, you know, we got into podcasts before they became big, then they became really big, and now they're starting to wane because there's too many.
Yeah.
I was reading an article about the App Store being the same thing. I mean, there are now over 1 million apps in the App Store. How are you going to get noticed if you make an app that doesn't do something novel?
Mm-hmm.
So it really, you know, there was a gold rush, and then things survive or fall or fail based on other things. You know, part of the reason why our podcast has had success is because we were early. But the other thing is that we were stubborn and we're doing it with not making any money. I mean, it costs us money to do it, but we just keep wanting to do it.
Right.
I mean, that's the weird thing is that a for-profit, you know, for-profit radio and stuff is they're having to do drastic things to keep their revenue streams above water, essentially.
Yeah.
It's a technology of time. It's like a telegraph. It's a technology of time. It's come and gone.
Yeah, I carpool, so, you know, every other week I don't control the radio, and he has satellite radio, so typically it's classic vinyl, you know, classic rock that I'm listening to. But there'll be times he has the DVE morning show on, and oh my god, what a piece of shit! I remember when I was, you know, a much younger person, I thought they're comedy geniuses and whatnot, and they've changed staff. What, you know, and I still think Scott Paulson's a very smart guy, but he is not on the show anymore, right? But you know, they have Val. What's her last name? But she reads the news, right? But her news, Greg needs to take a break, but just one last statement. And her, you know, they often...
Yeah, it's not a sudden. It's just, you know, when you get a chance.
They definitely, you know, half of her news is the goofy sex survey of the week and, you know, and or the people wasting, you know, government wasting money on, on a useful... You know, scientists wasting money on a useful project that sounds silly. You know, that kind of thing. And
wow, so it's really they've had to tailor their product to the audience that they think they can get, and it's very different than what you're used.
Yeah,
to.
I think maybe that's part of it, right? They know what their audience is now, and are it's a far. I mean, I don't know. I probably wasn't looking for as deep comedy back when I was 17, 18, either.
Right.
But it seems like a far cry from
what we used to get. Well, I mean, you definitely weren't. I mean, you can't recognize good comedy. Well, let's continue this later. Okay. So the interesting thing about comedy is that it's a lot like music. It's a subjective thing. But there's certain things that are somewhat transcendent. I know a lot more and appreciate a lot more about comedy than I do about music, so it's helpful in this situation, in this argument. But there's... So, I mean, I was going to say that it's hard to recognize good comedy when you only expose bad comedy, but that's not necessarily true. I mean, if you had only been exposed to DVE and then you saw a Richard Pryor thing, you'd still think Richard Pryor is funny because there's certain transcendence to what he does. There's certain timelessness to it.
Right.
But at the same time, there are concepts in comedy that can be worn down and made into something else. And like, you wouldn't understand meta comedy if you didn't understand why the other thing was, why it was funny in the first place, then stopped being funny. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a logical component to it too. When you learn more, there's more stuff to laugh about.
Right. Good point. Yeah. So I wish I could be in the same state of mind and listen to the old show and the new show and actually know that it's gotten much worse. And it wasn't always this shallow drivel that it is now, but it's going to be too hard. You know, I don't know. Right. There's also that whole fondness and memory thing. Right. Where
Your memory lies to you. Mm-hmm. Memory is a total liar. Okay, why did you bring up the Einstein thing? How do I bring this up? Talk about something. Let me think about this.
Okay. I did have something. What was it? It was... is it in my browser? No. Shit. I thought of something...
All right, I was thinking about this on the way in. I was just, because I was thinking about the quantum mechanics stuff, and I was also like, well, and I was starting to think about the Newton stuff and, you know, how Einstein figured out a lot more about what gravity is, but we still don't have a very good description of what exactly gravity is, but we know it has something to do with energy.
Okay.
And we didn't know that before. But, I mean, the really cool thing about Einstein is the same cool thing was about Newton, was he figured out something that people hadn't considered. And, you know, Einstein's real contribution, I mean, there are many, but Einstein's big idea essentially was that time is not this thing that just happens. Time is as much an object in the world as anything else. And it's tied in with this whole space concept, which is as much an object in the world as anything else. And discovering that then led him to say, well, okay, that's true, that's special relativity. What does that mean then if you manipulate it? And that's general relativity. And it took a lot more math and a lot harder to get around it. Right. But it's like, okay, wow, this thing that we always just thought of was this, just this thing that happened, is actually something physical that we can do things with. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And it meant a lot. It meant a great deal about reality, yeah, as it turned out.
Right.
That's all. Okay. I don't have anything else.
Right.
On that subject, at least. Bilk.
Bilk.
We had a listener tweet us.
Tonight's beer is. Tonight's
beer
right?
is, yeah. And he said he just finished listening to all of our shows. And so we were like, congratulations, and I'm sorry. but then I gave him a question of, since he just listened to all of them, I said, you know, okay, I'm a beer made in Japan, man with milk.
We used to do a what beer am I thing way back, right? And so this would be fresh in his memory.
Right.
So he replied almost immediately with Bilk.
Yeah. And then I told him that was wrong. Because it's not Bilk. It's Bilk!
Bilk!
It has to have some emphasis. Otherwise, it simply doesn't work. So, yeah. And then, you know, he asked for partial credit. And I said, well, I mean, I'll give you partial credit, but it has to see what Jeff says. And Jeff said, nope.
No.
It has to have...
He spelled it B-I-L-K. I don't even think he capitalized the B. You know, it has to have an exclamation point.
Yeah.
And it... At least it has to have the first letter capitalized, if not all of them.
We don't make the rules.
Yeah, that was a good interchange. I just sent Gary a care package. I sent him a couple bottles of the Savor beer and then that Trog shirt that I bought for him last year. So he'll be getting that shortly. Just so you're up on our comings and goings. I got two bottles of the Savor beer left. What's it called?
Hydra Cave.
Hydra Cave, yeah. Yeah, I got two more of those left. I had one. I'll share the next one with you for sure. But I had one, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, maybe a month and a half ago.
And he did capitalize the B.
Oh, did he? Okay. Just an exclamation point.
Right.
But I had one, I don't know, a month and a half ago or so, and it got really good. Really. I mean, the hops have faded on it, and they were saying drink it fresh, but...
Well, they were saying drink it fresh because they didn't know.
They didn't know, you know, and...
They've had problems with, like, flowers didn't age well.
Yeah, they liked where it was at, but no, it hasn't... at least so far, got pretty good.
I wonder if that's on eBay. I wonder, because we looked immediately after,
right,
but we couldn't find any. But we haven't looked in a long time.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would suspect that eBay has gotten better at cracking down on the sneaky bottle sales on. Yeah, there's nothing for Hydra Cave, at least active.
I had a little conversation with Jason about when Robin Williams happened. I don't know if you saw that. But,
Jason. No, I don't think I did see that one.
Because he was, I mean, he had a point. He was saying, you know, because when it happened, Twitter exploded with everybody saying, you know, what, mm-hmm. This is, you know, this is terrible, horrible. No, you know, it's a terrible thing, but Jason... Christian Cosina, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, you know, why... He says no ill will, but he doesn't understand the celebrity worship culture. Everyday people pass, mm-hmm. you know, die. Why is this one? And I was like, you know, and I wasn't scolding him because it's a valid point. And it's absolutely true that normal people die all the time. And yet people lionize this one person that hardly anybody who lionizes him actually knows. I said to him, grief is a strange and mysterious process, but one thing we know about it is it's collective. People share because it helps.
Right.
And he said he feels bad for the family, but he has no emotional connection, therefore he has no grief. And I was like, yeah, but yeah, sure, I understand that, but you respect that other people do, you know, for good or ill, those people with fame do gain attention and affect others disproportionately. And so, yeah, he basically said he's just perplexed about their reactions. And I said, you know, collective emotions are stronger and have more effect than individual ones. The pebble loses to the flood. So people go with it. And he said, well, perhaps I'm a rock. And I said, perhaps you are. And we just said, cheers. So,
yeah, I missed that one. That exchange. I didn't see that one. Yeah, I mean, probably a lot of people were, you know, I would guess that people were sad that, you know, with a lot of celebrities dying, actors, comedians, mm-hmm. that it means, you know, there'll be no more brilliant works from those right. people, right? That's kind of a sad thing.
That's definitely part of it.
No, I mean, I don't even want to argue about, you know, how good Robin Williams' recent work has been or not, right? I mean, he's done some sellout stuff, but he's done some good stuff,
too. Yeah, absolutely.
And even somewhat recently, he's done some
He was never stuff. One of my favorites, but that didn't mean that I didn't appreciate him.
Mm-hmm. Did you, I saw, it was a multi-part tweet, right? Those ones, Norm MacDonald was telling a story about the first time he met Robin Williams when he was a nobody. And I mean, it was a pretty good use of multi-part tweets. It was a touching story. Mm-hmm. It was told well. There's probably about 8 different tweets, actually, but I don't know. I just want to make the comment because you made it. You know, you were warm
long-form
on
long form tweeting. Yeah,
you were warm on long form tweeting, and I was not so much. But I mean, that one was a neat story that I would have never heard otherwise, right? Yeah. So
it has to be used with care. You can't mm-hmm. long form tweet all the time,
right.
But if you do it and you have a point, then it can right. be good. It's still compressed more mm-hmm. than it would be,
right.
and you can still just ignore it. But it's a great way that people are evolving, I think, to use the medium.
I replied to Alton Brown's one question the other day. I'm curious what your answer would be, and it was, if America had a national dish, what would it be? If
America had a national dish, what would it be? Does a dish mean like a composed thing or just a food?
Just a food, I guess.
A hot dog.
As actually, well, my answer was being a little bit smartass about it. I said 61 hot dogs, a cup of water, and a stopwatch.
Yeah, but I would probably say that. I mean, the first thing came to mind was the hamburger, but then thinking about it, I thought, you know, it's probably more the hot dog.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, of course, you know, hot dogs are bratwurst and they're German, but
yeah,
you know, so what? It's a national thing here,
right?
Although the hamburger comes in a close second.
Yeah. Yeah, I just was curious where you would go with the. That's the main reason I asked the question.
Oh, so what would you say is a serious answer?
Serious answer? It's a good question. I mean, I do agree with hot dog. It's probably, if I was going completely serious, I probably wouldn't have gone hot dog, right?
Well, I mean, I asked you whether, you know, composed dish or not.
Yeah.
If I was doing composed dish, yeah. The first thing that came to my mind was chili, but I don't know whether that is necessarily... That's a part of America, but does that cover all of Americana?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, you know, my thought process went was, is beer... Craft beer, you know, flavorful beer, any answer, right? But no, it's not
no.
national dish, right? Yeah. It's something America should be proud of, but, you know, not on the scale of hot dog. Right?
No, yeah, yeah.
And then, like, the other things that might be...
In a way, it's...
Like, people were saying barbecue. I think barbecue would be an interesting answer.
Barbecue
but...
is one of those things that really... It's one of the culinary styles that really originated in America. So, so that, you know, that's an answer, but I don't know whether that's,
it's not as widely available. Yeah. I mean, if you're going for gourmet dish, right, that's the difference, right? Dish and gourmet dish, right? If you're just saying dish, hot dog hamburger, right? Yeah. If you're saying gourmet dish, then you know you're starting to look at barbecue, and actually probably a lot of Southern cooking is like, even though it's not widely dispersed, it's probably some of the most national type dishes we got.
So here. I mean, you know, a casserole would be an example because you can do so much with, you know, a macaroni and cheese is a casserole, or you could do a
fried chicken.
You can do a whole bunch of casseroles. Yeah. So that would be sort of possibly the American dish. Right. Is the casserole.
Now I'm thinking of chicken and waffles. Chicken and waffles in so long. That's good. Maybe tomorrow I'll go find a place that has chicken and waffles. I wonder how far I'll have to go.
I went on a food truck journey today.
Oh, yeah?
I think you follow somebody, and maybe you tweeted something about food trucks, or...
I did. So I follow PGH Trucks with an X, T-R-U-X, and they kind of try to retweet all the food trucks things, but it's, you know, you're reliant on them actually doing the retweets. I ran out of space, so I only included two of the most popular food trucks to see if, you know, they could retweet, you know, if it would get traction or not. But, you know, they need to adopt a hashtag of some sort, right? Or you can just click the hashtag and see where all the food trucks are. Even better, you should be able to go into Foursquare and see where all the food trucks are. But since Foursquare sucks anymore, I'm not going to recommend that. But
anymore, a word that has been changed and it's used.
Okay.
Because anymore is originally does not only applies in a negative way. So negative in terms of what it does to the sentence. So we say, this doesn't happen to me anymore.
That actual one can be used positively, right?
But you're saying
I don't get zits anymore.
You're saying this does not happen.
I don't get zits anymore.
Right. So so that means any longer, essentially. Okay. I no longer get zits, right? But you use anymore as now.
Foursquare sucks.
Yeah. From now on, now.
Yeah. Now. Well, that's what I'm using it as. Is now. And as of recent history, Foursquare sucks.
As opposed to this...
Now and always.
This no longer happened. Yeah. This doesn't happen anymore. So it's a...
Yeah.
It's a weird usage that I think is kind of localized in this area.
So what food truck did you go to, or where'd you go?
There was a whole confluence of them.
Oh, did you go down?
At the outlets that I went to.
Oh, you went down to Washington?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was like, because I never really
there's
had
a lot there.
There were a bunch, and so I had a lot of choices. But I went with, a burger place.
Steer and Wheel.
Yes,
they make good burgers.
Yeah, so I had their Oscar, I think it was, or something, whatever it was, and then I also had a crepe.
Okay.
But there were a lot there. There was a meatball place that was interesting. There was the sweets truck. There's a BRGR truck. And I was like, why would I go to a BRGR truck if I could just go to BRGR, you know?
Yeah.
If I go to a truck, I want to get something that I can only get at this truck.
You know, Kings has a trailer now.
Yeah, I mean, I would...
And Uncle Charlie's Sausage just
launched
there.
Uncle Charlie's was there. I just like, you know, if I can go to a store, then I'm losing some of the uniqueness of getting the truck. I mean, I want to get the thing that only I can only get in the truck. I mean, I guess the crepes thing, well, I can get a crepe in other places, but not really. It's hard to find.
Right.
I can get a burger anywhere, too, but...
Steering wheel's pretty good.
Yeah. It was like, you know, well, I want to see what this place has to offer.
Right.
As opposed to, well, I can go into any of the 8 BRGRs that are around the city and get the same thing.
Right. Yeah, I was actually... It would have been funny if we would have went down there and seen you there. I was actually... Because I was checking this morning to see where the food trucks would be, you know, if there was any work that didn't do our plans at all. And, you know, if anywhere nearby, because that's the thing, like, I'm kind of conflicted on food trucks, right? Because there's great restaurants, but you know where those are, you know, if you're going to be near them.
Right.
So you always have to check and see if there's going to be a food truck that's going to be extra convenient, right? And because the food could be awesome, food could be on par with the places you're otherwise thinking of, right? But, you know, you always want to check to see if, oh, maybe it's a rare opportunity to try someplace because it's so convenient, you know?
Nothing was so amazing that I, like,
Okay. I've only had steer and wheel once, but that burger was really good.
It was a good burger. It was a very good burger. But it wasn't like, oh my God, this is something that I'm going to have to chase all the time. So I don't know.
I had a really good burger today. I've talked about this place before. Up in Zillionople, there's a place called Burgers, B-U-R-G-H, apostrophe E-R-S, mm-hmm. Burgers. And they use, you know, grass-fed beef, and they have like 8 or 9 gourmet taco or gourmet burgers with stuff on it. You know, there's ones with the cheese and the peppers, and there's one, you know, different kinds like that. And I've always thought their burgers are really good. I ordered it medium, and it came in, the juice was technically clear, I guess, but it was really mushy inside, you know, like the meat was not really starting to firm up yet. So it was okay.
I like my burgers. I like everything rare.
I know. It's a constant game, right?
Yeah.
Because you have to order based on how you think they're actually going to prepare it, and then they prepare it based on what they think you mean.
Right.
Because most people don't know what it literally means.
Well, because people have an idea in their head about what rare is to them, mm-hmm. but it's not very specific.
Yeah.
There's not a specificity in saying rare or medium rare. It implies a certain thing, but there's a lot of wiggle room.
Yeah. Yeah, so I ordered it medium. It came out on the light side of medium rare. Mm-hmm. And it was still a fine burger. But
if it's a grass-fed beef, it shouldn't be a problem.
It was still a fine burger. It's just the texture wasn't quite what I wanted. That was, yeah. I mean, the flavor was fine. It was just the texture. You know, I don't know. Rare ground beef, little mushy.
It can be. Yeah, I'm not against interesting textures like that, so I don't really have a problem with mm-hmm. it. I actually kind of like it when a burger is underdone.
So maybe it was more like beef tartare, right? You know, that kind of...
Yeah, beef tartare is, I mean, if it's made super right, then...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's like the place we went to in New York did not do it as well as the place in D.C.
Yeah,
because it was kind of like just ground meat, and it just wasn't chopped up mm-hmm. by somebody.
Right.
So yeah, ground beef is the textural component is a little more, just going through a grinder
mm-hmm.
makes it a little bit more mushy, which is not as appealing as chopped steak.
Yeah,
but. Still good.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it was just interesting, you know, because Heather actually ordered her burger medium, too, and it came out the same way.
Uh-huh.
She ate most of it, but give her props for eating most of it. But, yeah, it would not have been anything near what she intended, mm-hmm. right? I mean, she likes medium well, you know, medium well, right? Where the juice is clear and the meat's just slightly pink right in the center, you know? But yeah, not this one. This one was.
It seems like
it was warm in the center, but
awful thing to do to meat.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you could actually get, you know, like I said, if you get it what is technically right, you know,
mm-hmm.
and if you, I mean, you, I agree with you. I like some rareness to my meat as well. But if you could order a burger well done. Where the well done is proper, and you know, just to well done and not to destroyed, it's still a fine preparation of the meat. The thing is, when someone orders a burger well done, the kitchen doesn't want there to be any doubt that the burger was well done, so it's destroyed.
Right.
You know, so,
I mean, burgers are definitely different than steaks. Like, a steak has to be rare.
Oh, no, I agree. But, you know, talking about ground meat, the whole texture thing, it was a little gooey in the middle, so.
Yeah, I can't abide by a well-done steak. It's just, that's...
No.
Ugh.
I hear you. I hear you completely. Well, that's cool that you went down there.
Yeah, it was interesting. And especially, I was like, "Well, you know, I'm not going to Jeff's today, so might as well make a little journey."
And then we were thinking about going out of town today.
Uh-huh.
Heather's been wanting to go to Hershey Park. I don't know.
That's a long drive.
I know. I know. It's like 4 hours, a little touch over four. And that fell apart because our neighbors were out last night. And so kids were up late. Heather was out late. And I was out really late. I was out to about 2 o'clock, you know. And yeah, so, you know, in the morning, we're like, let's not do Hershey.
You would have to stay there overnight, right?
Yeah, we were gonna, have, that's why I wouldn't be able to do it tonight. We were going to stay overnight, come back tomorrow.
Still, I mean, you wouldn't have been able to do a show after 2 4-hour drives.
No. No, but I could have hung out at Trogues. I mean, that would have been the bright side, right?
Yeah. Fine. Yeah, but so Jeff informed me later that, hey, you can do a show today. I was like, all right, let's do it. Because one of the things I like about Saturday shows, as opposed to any other night, is that we can do these long post shows and not, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was really up to you, right? It depended if you had a schedule open or not, whether you wanted to do it tonight or tomorrow, like we had postponed it to. So,
the last thing I want to talk about is that there's a found a bar near me. I don't go to bars very often, but this is a good one because, well, you wouldn't necessarily enjoy it because they allow smoking in the bar. That's annoying, and but they have a great beer selection, all bottles. And it's cheap. I mean, like, a Fatheads cost $4 there. Or you go downtown or something, and you go to something, and Fatheads is at least $7, right?
Right.
So they're selling it to you almost at cost.
Right.
So Damien and I were there on Wednesday, and we each had, I think, 3 beers. And I even had a shot, and the bill was like $25.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Friday I went with Nick there because that was the thing I couldn't do Friday, and we had. I bought 5 beers. It was 2 rounds for me and Nick, and 1 round for Aaron, and that was $20. I mean. That's how much I spent at the food trucks, basically.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's cool.
And they were all good.
What's
beers.
This one called?
The Milestone.
The Milestone.
It's kind of near. Brentwood. It's in that sort of area.
Okay.
But Wednesday was great because even though they allowed smoking, there weren't a lot of people in there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you could get away from that. And you know, they don't sell food, so they don't have to accommodate. They can allow smoking if they don't sell food.
Less than half the revenue has to be from food.
To allow smoking?
Yeah.
So they can't. So if they don't sell food, they can.
No, they have to sell food to be a tavern, to have a license. You can't have a bar in Pennsylvania that doesn't provide food.
Okay.
Actually, I wonder how, like, you know, it's been a long... I used to go to Metropole, right? Uh-huh. Dance club, right? And they had booze there, but I don't know if there was ever... I mean, they must have had some kind of thing to meet the food stipulation.
There is a sign in there that says that it has wing night on Wednesday. Like,
okay.
But... We didn't. There's no like, cooking stuff.
No, yeah. You like to be a, to have a bar license. You have to have 30 seats and food, and you have to have enough food for all 30 seats. Like Hitchhiker Brewing out by where you work. I was asking them about their thing because they have food to meet the requirement, but they don't count their food as an important part of the revenue. So they're food truck friendly. You know, you can bring in stuff from outside, whatnot. But I asked them, you know, how the rules really worked, and yeah, it was the 30 seats. But like at the end of the night, they have to have enough hot dogs because that's what they sell is hot dogs. That if all the seats were full and everyone ordered a hot dog, they'd have enough food.
So they have to have 30 hot dogs, or
well, plus what they sold earlier in the
night. Right. Oh,
right?
Okay.
So.
Sounds weird.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Milestone. Actually, it's called the Milestone Bar and Grill. So they must have...
They must have food, yeah. They also, I mean, they do a great job because they have a chalkboard and they put all the, did a nice job of listing all the stuff that they have.
Okay.
And they have, you know, and saying about all the stuff that they've got in. They don't, and well, it's kind of a hole. You know, it's not like, ooh, wonderful insides, but everything's in bottles, so it doesn't matter. Right? I mean, it doesn't matter how much they clean their taps because right. You're not getting anything off the tap. So if you want to get something from a place that, you know, that has the newest beer in that's not in bottles, then this is not the place to go. But if you want to have a cheap time having some good...
There's a painter who just bought some beers at the Milestone on Google Street View.
They have it's a great selection. It's great to have a beer, a place like that somewhere nearby.
$2 domestic drafts? Or just domestic bottles, I mean. 23 craft beers on draft. Book your party today.
I didn't notice that many on draft, but...
Well, when Google last drove by, that's what they had.
I only thought I saw like 3 or 4 tap lines.
Now you have to check out the draft.
They have a bunch of bottles.
Cool.
And it's cheap.
Nice. Have to check it out sometime.
Yeah.
Even though, yeah, it's weird when you go into a smoking bar. I remember like the first time I'd gone into a non-smoking bar was when we were in New York. I think it was when Heather and I went to New York. And we're at the bar. And we're like, something's different. You know, like, what is different? Oh, it's smoke-free.
Right.
This is pretty awesome. And now it's complete opposite. You walk into a bar, and you're like, oh, my God, it's a smoking bar. It sucks.
Yeah. It's not ideal, but, you know, you take what you can get for a place that offers beers that cheap.
Right.
Know? So you don't have to buy a six-pack. You can just have 1 or 2 beers, and you can essentially get them for what you would.
Six-pack price, yeah. Cool.
All right.
I will. We'll be back again next week.
Yes, we will. Will next week be possibly the time when we could taste the beer?
It won't be carbonated. I'm gonna probably next day or two, maybe tomorrow, rack them over to a secondary, dry hop it.
Oh, okay.
Because I got those hops that I dried, right? So.
Do you want to? But doesn't that get rid of the whole wet only part of it?
Well, there's still... No, now it'll just be estate hops, right? I mean, I dried the leftover wet hops, you know, and they're in a bag right over there.
All right, I mean... Okay.
You're just using the hops, man.
Yeah, just use the hops.
Still harvest beer.
Yeah. So, but it... I wanted to name it I'm So Wet, because...
Still name it whatever you want. No one's going to see the name.
It's all wet. It's all wet hopped. So, I like I'm So Wet, because... Wet Hop American Summer is too obvious.
Right. Okay. You can name whatever you want, man.
Yeah. I'm So Wet.
All right. I ain't making labels.
We're not even bottling it, so.
Probably not. Maybe. We'll see. Probably not.